You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hi, yours listeners. It's Daily Show correspondent Michael Costa and Daily Show writer Kat Radley.
All right. Thanks for having me.
We're going to give listeners a little extra, ears extra, and unpack my week as the guest host and all the work that goes into making this show come together. Let's dive right in. Kat, what was it like writing for such a monumental comedic genius? Take
what
your
did
time.
I write for?
Take your time. Take your time with this.
Oh,
one.
No. It'll be short. Don't worry.
Oh, shit.
I will say, normally comics do like razz each other, but I am going to take a minute to compliment you.
Come on, here we go. This is what we want. Ears edition, extra.
Because you paid me a lot of money to say what I'm about to say. But in all seriousness, as a writer on this show, it's especially fun since we do have a panel of correspondents. We get to write for different voices, which is like a fun challenge as a writer. And across the board, everybody always loves writing for you because... Nice. Costa, you know, if you know in comedy, you're supposed to punch up. And as, you know, the handsome white man in the room, he is punching up. If we make fun of him, if he does self-deprecating jokes, he always takes it like a champ. You can play the punching bag, but in a very, like, smart, funny way. And writing for you as a host is different because you are in charge of the show now. You're not, you know... the funny man coming in who throws the host a curveball.
Right.
Like, you are in control. And it was a fun challenge to still write a good classic Costa joke, but, you know, having that new kind of presence and point of view. Usually you don't trust a correspondent with what they say on the show, but we did trust you as hosts. You really took control and, you know, did the job as host justice. So I think you did... A great job. And that's not easy to do.
Thank you. It's very interesting what you brought up because that's a very clear statement you made. It's hard to trust the correspondent. And, and you're right.
Yeah.
Because we're coming in dressed as the lion at the zoo or getting the boat.
It was a monkey.
And I did wonder if there was going to be any hurdles as Michael, the host, because it's different.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things as host was that I got to be host.
Yeah,
I got to be
yeah.
the leader. I got to be in charge and I didn't have to dress in the monkey costume or whatever. I like dressing in the monkey costume.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to always dress in the monkey costume. And it was fun to dress in the host suit.
Yeah.
It was nice.
I think for your week as host was especially challenging because it was the first show back after our long 5-month hiatus because of the writer's strike. And... also, the stories you got that week were particularly challenging. Do you want to break down, like, those are two separate challenges that converged at the same time.
Right.
Do you want to talk about what it was like?
I think one of them was an unreal opportunity that kind of happens with luck that there was a lot of eyes and ears on us because we've been gone for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that wasn't planned.
Yeah.
That was luck. That was, I was really excited that, hey, I get to lead us into this new era after the strike. People are starving for Daily Show. How cool that it gets to be me. flip side of that mm-hmm. was there was a very, still is, very serious war tragedy of Israel-Hamas war that I felt like we absolutely 100% had to cover and had to cover immediately.
Yeah.
And by the way, when I say cover, I don't mean you do the act and it's over.
Yeah.
But it would be shameful for the Daily Show that I know and have watched for years, to avoid a difficult subject because it's difficult. Hello. That's
totally.
That's what is literally the foundation, in my opinion, of this show.
Yeah.
Anybody can write jokes about Trump farting at a UN meeting,
yeah.
but like doing a heartfelt, real, fresh take that is funny, but also says something about the history of Israel and Palestine, I think is just like bread and butter Daily Show.
Yeah. That morning meeting, like we have a morning meeting where we look at all the stories mm-hmm. of the day and, you know, the host leads that meeting mm-hmm. and we all talk as a group of, you know, what are different takes and angles to cover this. How did that first morning meeting go for you? How did you feel kind of leading
yeah.
it for the first time?
Well, actually, I should pay Scott Sherman a tribute because Sunday I was driving back in the city with my family and Dan Amira, the head writer, forwarded me this thing that Scott had written that said, hey, if Costa wants to talk about Israel-Palestine, here's a couple thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I was so thankful for that because I did want to talk about it, but yeah. I was kind of twiddling my thumbs thinking, how? Right?
Yeah.
I'm a former Catholic Michigander. I've been to a bar mitzvah, but probably, I mean, if we really want to talk, I mean, yes, I could identify Israel and Palestine on a global map, but like just didn't, like so many Americans, didn't know, understand the full history and were afraid to even ask. So I was very appreciative that Scott sent that in, very appreciative that Dan didn't just block that,
mm-hmm.
you know, sent it to me and said, what do you think? And I said, yes, yes, yes. I love this idea. I don't love all your stupid tennis jokes, Scott, but why don't we work with it? So coming in Monday morning to answer your question, I felt like thanks to some good effort on the writing staff Sunday night, I already felt like a little bit ahead of
yeah.
it and I felt comfortable and that was super helpful. And I'm certain from your standpoint, I don't know, are you guys supposed to pitch Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, usually
it's super helpful.
Yeah,
it
coming
sucks
back,
that's your Sunday night.
Yeah, well, especially after coming back, like after a hiatus
right.
or a long break,
right.
we try to start pitching ideas Sunday or collecting thoughts. The host does find
yeah.
it helpful
because yeah.
you have to hit the ground running as soon as the day starts, and if you can already have ideas
yeah.
in the tank, it makes it easier.
I feel like I'm turning into my mom, but I swear to God, if even from a personal standpoint, if I take 30 minutes Sunday night and like think about what's for lunch tomorrow.
yeah.
Now with kids, like, are the clothes clean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, holy shit, my life is a lot easier. I'm turning into my parents.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you got to do your homework
you
and, prepare.
And prepare.
They were
yeah.
right all along.
They were right all along. So, yeah, I was very pleased with how we didn't shy away from that.
Yeah.
And Daily Show did a good job.
And I think also your honesty about your ignorance. Because
yeah.
I felt another former Catholic
oh, yeah.
Virginian. Like,
yeah.
I also, it's not my wheelhouse
yeah.
either.
Yeah.
And I had the same thoughts like you like said, you know, I read the Wikipedia page.
Right.
I don't know if you want people to know that.
No, it was in the act.
But that's
yeah.
also like that's what a lot of people watching our show are doing, too.
Of course.
And I think they appreciated your honesty. And that was the great like the perfect take to bring people
yeah.
through the story because it was honest. And there is humor in your ignorance. Again, you kind of
yeah.
let yourself be the punching bag
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like a great, I think, example of how you do that while also
yeah.
leading people through it.
Good. It's my big week as guest host, and I get Israel-Palestine. I don't mean to complain, but as far as scheduling goes, this unspeakably tragic geopolitical crisis is not super convenient time for me right now. Because no matter what I come up with, people are just going to say, this guy doesn't know what the f*** he's talking about. And you're right. That's pretty much the only opinion everyone can agree on. Michael Costa is an idiot. And what do I know about the Middle East? I'm from the Middle West. I'm from Michigan. The best way I would describe my position on the Middle East is poorly educated. And that sounds harsh, but at least I'm aware of it. Because I read a lot of your posts online, and sometimes it's better not to pretend you know what you're talking about. I have friends on Facebook who have the whole Middle East figured out, when I know for a fact they can't even get car insurance.
And everyone has an opinion for who's responsible for it. It's Israel, it's Palestine, it's Netanyahu, it's Hamas. Everyone's taking a side, but everyone is wrong. Because I spent the weekend reading two lengthy Wikipedia articles, and I think it's pretty clear who we can blame for all of this mess. The British, okay? Yeah.
I think I'll go on record to say this. I am tired of people on TV who wear suits knowing all the answers. I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
They don't know the answers. Maybe they have a couple researchers, that's fine. But I think there's actually more clout in admitting, and ignorance is a very strong word, admitting that you don't have this figured out, and let's all work through this together. That's mm-hmm. so much, that's so, so sexier to me.
Yeah.
It's so much, more human.
It is. It's so much more honest. Yeah. And I think there's more room for comedy in that.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
We kind of touched on this a little bit, the big difference between being a correspondent, sitting at the desk, and also you had the advantage of like the various guest hosts we've had. Mm-hmm. You're one of the correspondents who, you know, you've been here for a while. You knew what the deal was going into it. How did that kind of play into your hosting week of having the familiarity and, I'll say it, the trust of everyone
show? That's the same word I was going to use. Maybe if I was just coming in as an outsider, I would be a little more skeptical. Like, do the writers know who I am? Mm-hmm. Do I trust that they can write a funny joke?
I mean, not all writers still know who you
are. That's true. I definitely trust the system here. Mm-hmm. I trust the process. It's been on air for 25, 26 years. There's a lot of stuff you learn, a lot of efficiencies. They figured out how to be most productive. So it was nice to let the machine work and to be at like a little bit of a higher position in the machine where I could help guide it towards mm-hmm. what I thought was interesting. It was fun to kill a couple Trump jokes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this is that interesting. But then also one comes across and you go, this one is interesting. Let's talk about this one. So that's really fun because typically as a correspondent, I'm not deciding. Yeah. I can adjust jokes and if I don't feel comfortable, whatever. But I'm not deciding what we're talking about. So it was fun to play God for a week.
Yeah, you were a real monster that week.
But I also think the familiarity, it just only helps. So much of comedy, as you know, from a performer too, it's just being comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sure it's the same with you for stand-up. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my stand-up has just gotten closer and closer to who I actually am. Mm-hmm. I get more comfortable on stage, and I felt like I feel very comfortable in this building, and I think the writing staff feels comfortable with me. It just only helped.
Yeah. I think that honesty, comfort, and confidence, I mean, that's really what you need to deliver a joke like the best you can. Now, in terms of your guests, so you brought on Ian Bremmer.
I hate when the show goes over to the guests. I had Ian Bremmer, Israel Palestine. He's a political scientist. I then had Emily Oster, who's a parent data expert, parenting world. I then had on musician, Pulitzer Prize winner, Grammy winner, Rhiannon Giddens, who did a performance for us.
Yeah,
awesome, a really powerful performance. She sang a song called Another Wasted Life, and behind her, she paired with the Pennsylvania Innocence Project. Behind her, the show, good job, control room, directors, lighting, put up the images of all these wrongly imprisoned mm-hmm. people. That their wrongful imprisonment added up to over 500 years. It's crazy. It's like, it's insane. And then the last guest was survivalist Jordan Jonas, who is a friend of mine. And I was very thankful for him as a guest because it was nice to just talk to a dude mm-hmm. about shit that I find fun.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like parenting or Rhiannon Giddens' music or Ian Bremmer, but they're just a little, they're more serious topics.
I think you earned it. You deserved a little break at the end. Did you want to say anything about like how you chose them or what it was you were looking for in a guest?
I wanted an eclectic mix, which we definitely got. Mm-hmm. A lot comes down in booking to availability of guests.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted a tennis player. Pro tennis player, duh.
Womp womp.
They're all in China. They're all playing in China. Beth and Shauna, booking department. That is a tough job. Every publicist is like pitching them, and they've got to deal with all this BS. And
it's so hard to schedule drinks with a friend.
I know. And now you're like booking, you know. So I asked for the Israel-Palestine. I said, we really need somebody that can digest this, distill it, an expert, because it's not me.
Yeah.
And I'm comfortable saying that. And that was just such a beautiful booking, because I could make my jokes up front. I could make a quick take that I still stand by that take. Britain did start this 100 years ago by drawing maps. I mean, the Romans started 3,000 years ago, but that's a different podcast. And they booked Ian, and he was great. You know, Ian, tell me what's going on.
Parenting. I learned a lot from that interview.
Yeah.
Simple question, not to be insensitive, but for so many Americans that see this as something so far away, why should they care about what's happening?
Because in principle, we, the United States, stand for something beyond just ourselves. I mean, maybe America First doesn't quite say that, but the Statue of Liberty does. Yeah. We all came from somewhere, right? I mean, the Jews and the Palestinians are the same people. They came from the same place. They've grown up in the same home. And we as Americans, who have historically represented that ethos better than anyone else on the planet, how can we not care when that is falling apart right now in the most tragic possible way in front of our eyes? How can we not care about that?
Yeah.
That's why it matters to us as Americans. Not because oil's going to 150, not because people are losing their jobs. No, it's because we as Americans, if we stand for anything, we stand for that.
And then Emily Oster, my wife, just has all her books and has helped us in parenting.
I read her book.
You read I was wondering
her pregnancy book. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Rhiannon Giddens. I love the idea of a musical guest. To be honest, I wasn't fully aware of her prior to the booking, but one of those wonderful surprises where it's like, holy shit, I can't believe this person hasn't been on radar. And that's kind of what I loved about her. Mm-hmm. She's so accomplished, but she's not a master marketer.
Yeah.
She's not a master Instagrammer. She's just a master at this craft. Mm-hmm. And a lot of her music has true activism behind it. So like, that's a no-brainer for The Daily Show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was fun. And it's like when you ask your friend to come on The Daily Show, they kind of have to say yes. It's kind of nice.
Oh, yeah, they don't have a choice.
They're not going to say no.
Yeah. In terms of Jordan Jonas, mm-hmm. your friend, mm-hmm. so you actually, you did know him before. You guys were friends. Mm-hmm. He does like wilderness experiences. He's a wilderness guide, and you took one of his courses.
Yeah, I mean, I knew him because my wife bought me, for a birthday gift, a week in the Bitterroot Mountains at 11,000 feet, a week with him to learn, and other psychos that wanted to do this. Actually, I think she was just trying to kill me, my wife. Like, here, go to the mountains. So
she texted me. She was like, it didn't work.
Didn't work. He's coming back alive. And even worse, he's never going to stop talking about this trip. So he teaches you survival skills. We had food and everything. It wasn't like I was procuring. We did have 24 hours where we only ate what we procured from the land.
Oh, okay.
That was wild. I shot a grouse. I ate a shitload of huckleberries. We caught trout in the stream. So that was very cool. And I gave me a whole new appreciation of human connection to food. Mm-hmm. I would probably describe myself as someone that hunting makes feel icky. I don't love the idea of killing an animal. But then I think about my purchase at the grocery store, and it's like a lot of animal stuff.
And it's kind of like worse.
It's way worse. Yeah. It's way worse. And it's like oftentimes I'll throw meat away. It's gone bad. I don't even know what this animal looks like. And so I really had a profound...
You don't know what a cow looks like?
I don't know what a cow looks like. I had a profound experience out there feeling really connected to nature. And Jordan is such a patient... I mean, I am like an idiot. I don't know how to sharpen a knife. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. And he's like a guy who can survive in the wilderness on his own, truly. And he's patient enough to teach me how to make a fish hook. It was really fun and cool experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah. When I went back to see him before the show, he said, "Well, now I'm in your world, huh?" Because it was like this was a lot for him.
You're like, "Yeah, get your knife, buddy.
Get your knife out, buddy. Let's go stab somebody."
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
In terms of like the work that goes into it, like, you know, we usually come to work every day, do stand up at night.
Yep.
Now both, you know, we have two kids,
Jesus,
family.
What are we doing?
Terrible decisions.
Well, you have twins. Are we allowed to say that? I mean,
yeah, you can say it.
Yeah.
Does it feel
good to come to work?
Yeah, it's like a break.
Yeah.
It's like this past Sunday night, I was exhausted. I was like, I can't wait to go to work tomorrow and relax.
I know. And then what happens when they get older is, I hate to admit this, I love my children, but I start to see the weekends as the work days and the work days as the weekends.
I mean, and I love both, but I mean, we also are lucky that we do have a pretty fun job.
Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
It is like,
I'm not like pressing aluminum steel into
yeah,
it.
I'm like, we get to go and hang out with cool people and write jokes all day.
Jokes,
What was that workload like being the host? Did you notice a massive difference of what it really took from you day to day?
It is wild that the more you're involved, the more the show feels like your show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was very appreciative that you get to that morning meeting at 9 a.m. before the writer's meeting, and you can help select some of the stories. And it's like, that really starts things off.
Yeah.
But the hardest part is you go all day working on the show, and then at like 6, you're supposed to be Mr. Funny Guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exhausted. At 6, I want to go home.
Yeah.
So, also, I don't know what happens if the host has a dentist appointment or an emergency or is sick, because the writers have to get going. And if you don't have the feedback, I guess you probably just get more used to the host point
of
view.
Task rabbit a guy to come fix your teeth.
Right. Yeah.
In your office.
Yeah. You have a dentist come to the office. Yeah. But I got better with the workload as the week went on.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the sadness of guest hosting is you kind of feel like you understand what's going on when it's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a vacation. Like, I know that's my dive bar this vacation. And it's like, you're going home tomorrow.
But I know Carlos, my server.
Right. Exactly. So it's a hard job. It's a slog. It's a day job. It makes me laugh when I read that these celebrities want the job. They don't want the job. They want their name on the poster.
Yeah.
It's a hard job.
You gotta be at work at 9 a.m.
Yes, correct.
Every day.
And then if you don't know a subject, you gotta start to learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's fun for me, but it's a hard job. And I remember at the Emmys a couple years ago when everyone was like waiting for their bus, because that, to me, that seems like all I ever remember of the Emmys is never knowing where your bus is. Somebody from Succession, one of the EPs, was like, what you guys do is actually noteworthy.
Oh, yeah.
The fucking Succession EP was like, you guys have a hard job. We're just playing make-believe over here. And I was like, well, then give us more time at the fucking Emmys.
I know. Yeah, like we get the writers and different categories are like, okay, you guys can be at the Creative Arts Emmys and we're not going to televise those categories. And it's like, all right.
I know.
One of the things we have every guest host do is a deep dive into a particular topic that may not get a lot of attention or is really important to them, and you wanted to tackle the plastic water bottle crisis that's killing the environment.
Let's talk about water. It's the thing you hope you just sat in on the subway. According to doctors, we're supposed to drink water basically every day. And in America, most of us do that with the help of these. The number one packaged drink in the United States isn't Coke or Gatorade or even Haterade. It's bottled water. We Americans buy 50 billion disposable water bottles a year. And I know what you're thinking, oh shit, another depressing environment story. So can I not even drink water without ruining my children's future? But that's the thing. This is one environment story that actually has a really easy solution. And I'm gonna tell you what it is in another installment of Long Story Short.
What made you pick that and how did you feel it worked on the show and what did you do to prepare for it?
I like water stories. I believe is it hydrologist? Is that the word that's in the
hydrologist?
Hydrologist. But also the other word that I really like is limnology, the study of freshwater.
I might
be pronouncing it wrong. Total nerd. I love water. I love water. It sounds funny to say into a microphone.
You sound very high right now.
I fucking love water. I'm a Michigander. We're surrounded by water. We take it for granted. All these other problems in our world, social problems, they only exist because we're like functioning as humans with flesh because we have water. So it starts with this passion for water. The water bottle became a pitch in the water world that I really resonated with. And that was like, oh my God, we all do this. I mean, Americans using 50 billion plastic bottles a year. Thankfully, since I put out this piece, people have been tweeting pictures of me with plastic bottles, kind of like, oh yeah, Mr. Hotshot.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I was like,
gotcha.
Okay, yeah, gotcha. So I want it to be known to everybody that, yes, I have used a plastic bottle in my life. And maybe that's how I know about the subject.
He's being honest, admitting his mistakes, growing and changing.
Right, growing and changing. How did it work? I think it worked great.
I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, I don't know like how we determine that. Like, did plastic bottle consumption go down after this piece? That'd be nice to know.
I'll check
Get
the
on
data.
It, podcast
Emily
department.
Oster, what's the data
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite parts of the piece is what you have in your hands right now.
I have this giant, massive half gallon that I fill twice a day.
I love that you have that. God, that's a big one too. That's great.
Because I don't have to keep getting up to refill.
No, it's excellent. It's excellent. And it was really important for me that this long story short had an answer, had a solution.
Yeah.
Really important. Because we're all tired of hearing that the climate's changing and then just being like, okay, well, I can't, what do you want me to do? Fight big oil?
Yeah.
Using a refillable water bottle cuts down on fossil fuels, creates less waste, and could even save you $16,000 over its lifetime. That's enough to pay for a luxury vacation or 16 shitty vacations. So long story short, this is like the easiest choice in the history of no-brainers. If everyone in the United States just went with the reusable water bottles, we'd save money, solve an environmental crisis. And the best part of that is then that's one less environmental crisis you'd have to hear people like me bitching about. You probably already have 9 of these. Open a cabinet in your kitchen and one will fall on you. And tomorrow, start using it. That's how you save the planet.
One of the favorite parts of the piece was when it was like, hey, open your kitchen cupboard right now. You have 9 of these things already. Like, you already have them. So
people
just start
using
it.
People give them to you as gifts and you're like, I don't want this.
Yeah, just you already use it. So it's simple. If people take one thing from it, it's just use a reusable water bottle. I truly believe in 20 years, we're going to look back on this time frame like our parents look back on smoking.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, oh, you just use the disposable water bottle of it?
You used, what, 8 a day?
8 a day. Yeah. So it's ridiculous. So it was a small little attack. I hope it helped.
I hope Poland Springs comes for me.
Yeah, come. Well, Poland Springs can still sell us water, but just sell it in a reusable
really
water bottle for double the price.
Yeah. You said you like water stories. Really quick, I have one. I'm not sure what you mean by water stories. Maybe
we'll
this
share
is
this one.
One
and we'll see.
I do have twins. I'll make this quick. And so I drink a lot of water so I can make enough breast milk for them.
It's so important.
And at the very beginning, I was drinking so much water.
Mm-hmm.
I gave myself hyponatremia.
No.
Yes.
I've never known anybody to actually get
this. I had
this.
It because I started feeling, nauseous, sick, like dizzy. And so I went to the doctor. They took my blood. I had washed out all my electrolytes. I had no chloride.
You overwatered.
I overwatered. And my doctor was like, just stop drinking water.
I have never heard anybody. I mean, I'm fully believe that this entire world would be way healthier and less war and anger if we were just more hydrated. But you are the one example.
I'm the one who took it a little too far.
Yeah.
Plenty of breast milk, though. I had a lot of breast milk.
Right.
But I looked it up and they were like, super athletes get this. People who use party drugs like ecstasy.
Oh, because they overdrink.
Yeah. And I was just like, that's so fun. Well, we can add lactating mothers to that list.
I thought you could give babies water.
Okay, you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, did you learn that the hard way?
I didn't, but I was like probably filling up a bottle, and my wife was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Also, they can just take a bath by themselves too, right?
Right, yeah. No, but it's good that you drank that much water.
Yeah, yeah. I'm doing it. Before we do wrap up, was there anything that really stood out from your hosting week that you wanted to talk about or say, you know, to share that maybe you didn't get a chance to?
I think the viewers know this, because they're really loyal to us, but there's just so many people involved.
Yeah.
And I tried to thank a lot of people, but you leave the building going like, oh, audio or oh, like the graphics. There's just so many people connected to the show that work hard, and it's just a really fun team environment.
Yeah.
I love stand-up, too, because I get to say and do whatever I want, but it's fun to be in a team environment where we're all moving towards the same goal, which is to shoot the show.
And it's to make you look good.
And it's to make me look good.
And one day we'll accomplish that.
Even Deezus tonight, he's out there trying to make me look good. Yeah. No, but I was very appreciative of the week, and the writers did an excellent job making me feel like me. Thank you.
Good. That's important.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, Kat.
So. And how did your family feel like about you hosting? Like,
it was great. Yeah, it was great. I said on my own podcast, the Tennis Anyone podcast with Michael Costa, that I don't understand how anybody could do this without like a supportive partner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wasn't home all week. My kids came to the show Monday. I kissed them on the head and then ran into the writer's room. So this was a team effort all around. I felt very supported at home. That's very important. And then to have the enthusiasm of my wife, too, who kept coming to the shows and bringing her friends. Like, that's so fun.
That's nice.
It's like when you start doing stand-up and the girl you're dating like is like, oh, I do want to see your show. You're
For
like,
the
what?
First time in her life, she was proud of you.
Exactly. Possibly. Or she's just like, no, you actually have something fun to go to now. It's not just like a bar show.
At 10 p.m. in Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt a lot of love, and it makes you feel good inside. And then Monday, I came back to this studio to shoot something because they needed to throw me off a ledge and die in a Project Conspiracy piece. And I said, this is perfect.
You're like, yep, and I'm back.
So thanks for asking me such cool questions, Kat.
Oh, hey, anytime. And again, I think you crushed it.
Thank you.
It was super fun. And, you know, everyone at the show and the writing staff especially, I think everyone had a blast that week. And we're cheering for you and wanted you to succeed. And you did.
That's nice. I felt it. Thank you.
All right. Awesome.
Thanks for listening to The Daily Show Ears Edition. I'm Michael Costa.
And I'm Kat Radley.
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.